The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, welcome to this special episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box interview episode for the writers and artists, so the creative team behind Nuclear Power. I'm going to have the best time saying that word. On the line I have Lynn Yoshi, Desiree Proctor, and Erica Harrell. I think I'm saying that right. And I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves and say what you do on the book so that our listeners know who you are.
Well, I'm Desiree. I'm one of the writers.
Yes, I'm Erica. I am one of the writers.
And hi, I'm Lynn. I'm the artist of the book.
That is awesome. So the easiest way to start this is somebody give me a brief rundown of the basic plot of Nuclear and maybe let me know how to say that word. I know I'm going to stumble over it every time. Nuclear Powers.
Sure. So Nuclear Power is an alt history comic book based around the Cuban Missile Crisis that posits the lengths to which a government will go to protect or deceive its citizens.
And our main character is this woman, Claudia Tachi, and she's this young mother who comes across this dark secret that the authoritarian government that leads this new country is trying to keep from citizens. And so it goes to the lengths it follows her story. She tries to lead this new American revolution in order to protect her unborn nuclearly enhanced child that she carries. So yeah, it's a real fun piece. A lot of comedy.
It's a comedy.
You were going for real lighthearted.
Yeah, definitely.
So where did the idea for kind of doing alternate history where nuclear war has broken out, and the United States has had to kind of reform in a post-apocalypse, but in a different time frame than we're used to?
Well, Desiree and I actually are both from Florida, and we both have Cuban mothers. And indirectly, even though we're only in our 30s, the Cuban Missile Crisis sort of loomed over both of our families in different ways. And we're actually we love history and we love genre. And we wanted to kind of combine those two things in a comic book. And we thought it would be really cool to explore what would have happened if things had gone differently in 1962 and the Cuban Missile Crisis had gone the other way, where we would have started a war with Russia. So we kind of brainstormed about that a lot and kind of wanted to add a super powered genre twist to this.
Yeah. So we're kind of calling this Nuclear Power is, a Handmaid's Tale, met X-Men. That's the short description of the vibe of this comic book.
So Lynn, working with a piece that has kind of a period mentality, did you approach the art differently?
Yes, I did. I did a lot of research, basically not just looking at because it's a society that has somewhat remained stagnant since the 60s. Of course, you have to base designs, cars, and clothes and environment to reflect that. But also the design of the 60s and 70s. And we start the story in with this war with, the communists, but, USA it turns into this fascist government later on. So to reflect that, the kind of style is reminiscent, at least the coloring is a little bit reminiscent of the old communist propaganda posters. So the design, story elements and themes have been reflecting the story. Yeah, the design of the book.
Yeah, it took a lot of research for all of us going back and looking at, because most of our story is set in Chicago. And so it's okay, well, you know what Chicago looks like now, but what did Chicago look like in 1962? So, what buildings were there? What would they look like now if they'd aged a bit? What would not have been built? what kind of cars would people still be driving around. And it required a lot of research for all of us. And even Erica and I went and looked up if the nuclear bombs had been dropped during the Cuban Missile Crisis, where were the target sites? And in our research, we found like Russia would have hit the United States on both coasts. So like that's why the new country has reformed in Chicago, around Chicago, because Washington, D.C. is gone. California is gone. Florida's gone. And what were the target sites in Russia? And we were surprised to learn that it was also like China, which was called Manchuria back then, gone, because the United States was like, if we can take out this communist country, the USSR, let's take out China while we're at it. And so like basically most of the northern hemisphere was just decimated.
And look-wise, we were also like really inspired at like this new nation that, you know, was once very prosperous, like it was Chicago in the 1960s. What would that have looked like through like the filter of what, you know, 2019 North Korea looks like, or 2019 Havana, where like they're still repurposing sort of like old cars, old technology, and trying to kind of like put that into nuclear power. So it has like the sort of distinct look of like, this is what America would be like if America were kind of the way North Korea is currently today.
So when you're working on this book, like so much research and history is going into it. Like, do you ever have those moments where you really struggle on making sure that everything is right? Like, I know I wrote a piece of fiction one time where I wanted like one sect of like Islam to coexist with a different sect of like Christianity at the same time, and those dates just didn't work, and so I felt like scrapping the story completely. Like, do you ever worry on that level, or am I just insane?
No, you're not insane at all. I mean, we had a long conversation of, well, it's 1962, so you know, the civil rights movement didn't really happen until the late 60s. Is this like a storyline we touch on? How much of that is going to affect the world? And then we got like so in the weeds of, well, the space race didn't happen, civil rights movement didn't happen, like all this stuff didn't happen. And then it became, we wanted to cover so much, and then having to like pick and choose what was important to the themes of our story was really hard for us.
Yeah, we ended up, because we were only doing this as 6 issues, we ended up like scaling back a lot of those kind of side stories that we would have loved to have done, like if we were able to do it like Walking Dead, you know, or just like issue after issue, you know, for like over a decade. So we kind of peeled back and like found like what is essential to telling our main character Claudia's story. And
went just stuck with that. Yeah.
sounds like you guys have research started for volume 2 is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, we've talked about like, oh, we could do nuclear power set in like Russia. What does Russia look like today? What does England look like today? We could go global with this.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So I haven't had the opportunity to read this book yet, which I am really excited to. When I'm looking at like the sample pages that we got and like the art and everything kind of put together, I definitely get that like communist propaganda vibe from the art. How did you like modify or approach like mutant powers to make them fit that same kind of like artistic scheme?
So the individuals with the powers within our comic, their powers are limited to the powers and abilities that people may realistically have if they were exposed to nuclear contamination and nuclear waste.
We are kind of thinking like they only have one of two abilities, and nobody has both abilities. And one of those abilities is like splitting your form, like an atom splits. The other is like transferring energy, nuclear, like radiation and stuff. So we try to keep it as simple as possible. But like Lynn can speak to how she was able to like communicate that with the artwork, because I'm sure that was like a bit of a challenge, especially with just the limited color tones and palettes.
Yeah, I painted myself into a corner in that one. I said, yeah, let's make it all fancy. And if I do it like, you know, just a single color, it'll be really, you know, it'll distinct itself from other comic books. Like, oh, crap, now I can't distinct powers from with colors. Like, oh, no.
But you do such a great job at it. It looks amazing.
Thank you. So if there's like any kind of process of it, like it's just like, I only have these many colors left. You know, I guess you become more creative if you're like boxed into something. So yes, it was helpful, but it also kind of made me panic a little bit. But if I pull it off, then yay.
Yeah, you definitely pull it off. Was it more like a process of elimination, trying out different looks to see what worked best?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. You're asking if I like did like a process of elimination thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh well, I guess this is a lot with my color work. I just throw anything on the computer screen and see what works. And it's I wish it was a more well thought out process that I could explain. It's not. It's just more like let's try this. Okay, let's try this. Let's try this. Oh, that one works. I'll do that one.
So, I feel like you're explaining my whole career as a podcaster right now.
So. To be honest, for the up and coming artists out there, I always think like, oh, I think I got away this time. That's always their project. Did I get away with it this time? I think I got away with it this time.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Anytime Lynn emails us pages, we're just like. We're just, our breath is always taken away. We're like, oh, this just looks stunning. Like, this just elevates our material so much. Yes. So
we end up deleting more of our words so we can see more of her pictures.
Nice.
And then she ends up saying, guys, I think you need to put some more words in here. And we're like, bah.
You're like, no, it's good. It's good. They'll get it. You know, the comic is going to be releasing in single issue form on Comixology, and then it's going to be coming out as a trade. It looks like Fanbase had indicated sometime in early 2021. When you're thinking about, you know, how to, you know, market and like expose the book to people, what are some of the techniques that you guys are planning to use to like bring more exposure to a book that's just on Comixology for now?
Well, we're very new to marketing anything. Erica and I, we mostly write for television and writing for other people's TV shows. So like we're kind of new to having to market ourselves and
a product actually ours. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be a bit of a learning curve. And luckily we have, Barbara and Bryant at Fanbase Press to really like lead us through that. But we definitely wanted to time the release of the first digital issue with the anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis, which is why the first digital issue is going to be released on Comixology in October 2020. And we also made the announcement of this comic book at LA Comic Con this past October to also tie it into the anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis. So other than that,
Our hope is that, you know, in some ways it's like hopefully this book could appeal to a kind of a wide variety of readers. It's people who like genre and like superpowers. It's people who might like alternate history takes. It's women as like an all-female creator team, which was, you know, really important to us. Like Desiree and I are a writing team, like she said, in television, and like we really wanted a female artist to have the opportunity to draw this whole book. And so, you know, it's about women's issues and it's about choice. And like, you know, so we're hoping to maybe bring in like the average comic reader as well as maybe like other people who might not necessarily read comics all the time, and like hope that this is like an accessible entry point for some people who may be history fans or like maybe like, you know, like female issues fans, and kind of take that as like an angle in our marketing as well.
So as you're going to like conventions and you know, kind of introducing yourself to the world of like comic book culture and stuff, how is it different than interacting like in television and with like that kind of, I guess, like circle of people? Like, what are some of the differences that you're seeing between the two different communities?
Let's see. I mean, Erica and I have like a weird like career experience. Like we've done, not only have we done TV, but we've done video games. We used to write for Telltale Games, and that's how we got into writing writing comic books. Actually, we were writing on one of the Walking Dead Telltale Games and applied for the DC Comics writing program and got into the program there. I think one of the first things we noticed is video games and television are both very, very collaborative mediums. You have like rooms full of people working together at the same time. Like literally we were just rewriting a script for our show and it was eight people in their room writing the script, one script at the same time. Whereas with comic books, you know, a writer goes off by his or herself and writes and then passes it off to an artist who goes off by his or herself and draws. So it's a lot more solitary work.
Yeah, not to sound like depressing, but you are pretty isolated as a professional in this industry. Yeah.
So I think like when we're meeting, when we're going out and meeting comic book people, it's like, I mean, to us, it's, we've always gone to conventions as fans, so that's not anything new to us, but the working of it, the writing of it, the process of creating it is very different than the process of creating television or video games. But the people and the fans, I feel like, are all very similar.
So as you're like starting to, you know, put the word out there about the book and like kind of interact on social media and stuff like that. What's the reception been like so far?
It's been really positive and very, you know, supportive of us. As Desiree mentioned, fan base press headed up by Barbara and Bryant Dillon have been so lovely and just setting us up and having us do some interviews and like people seem pretty intrigued and like they see Lynn's artwork and then they're like, wow, look at that. So
yes, I'm very grateful for them because I have been admonished for my horrible social media skills. So like doing the promoting and marketing stuff is like a big relief for me because
Yeah. I mean, just posting Lynn's artwork, I got so many messages from people like, this looks amazing. I pre-ordered the book. And the great thing about the pre-order is it comes with all this like exclusive artwork. It's going to include all of the covers, like prints of all of the covers, including a variant to the very first issue, a cover of the very first issue. So you're getting like seven pieces of Lynn's amazing artwork, like included in the pre-order as a little bonus. So it's like an incentive to get and buy now while you can to get her artwork.
Yeah, her artwork and our signatures, which mean nothing.
Well, they mean something. I mean, it's you putting your stamp on of approval on your work. Like it's funny because I'm a signature collector. Like, so I like stuff like that just because, and I always get it personalized. I'm not in it to like resale or anything like that. And people always think it's weird. They're like, why do you even do that? You don't get certificates of authenticity and stuff. I'm like, I just like going to tell the people that made it how cool I thought their book was. That's all I really care about. So
that's awesome.
So giving out your signature is important. I know people think it's super dorky, but I don't. So
I mean, do you have any tips for us on marketing and promoting? Since I mean, you're probably more experienced than we are.
Yeah. Oh man, I don't know. Don't be afraid to spend small amounts of money on Facebook ads. Like something as little as like $1 a day can really help, which is really weird.
Interesting.
It took me years and years to figure that out.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I guess like for us, for the podcast, I think the most important thing is just word of mouth. Like you tell people to tell other people. And that seems to work. Like, once somebody's excited and tells you, hey, I really liked your thing, you say, well, go tell like 5 other people that you know are going to like it so that they'll listen, or in your case, read, you know, as well. That's really, word of mouth is the most important thing, I think.
Okay, solid advice. Thank you.
And bribery. My wife says bribery.
I'm not above
she sounds smart
people.
Yeah. I will give you $5 if you buy my $1 book. Sorry. So when you you know, as you're getting ready to release in October, which, you know, I'm sure seems kind of like a long ways away, but really isn't. As I get older, I'm finding that that's weird and time is horrible, but you know, as you're getting ready to release in October, like, what are some of the other, like, are there other events that you're going to be attending and stuff?
We'll be at Long Beach Comic Con next month.
Nice.
On a panel there with fan base press promoting the comic, and I have a feeling we'll have many more conventions in our future, which we're excited about. We love any excuse to go to a Comic-Con, so
yeah. And it's somewhat fortunate, like, Desiree and I are based in Los Angeles and Lynn is actually based in New York.
Yep.
And she gets around and goes to, you know, a lot of conventions on the East Coast, and she's going to actually be at Emerald City, right, Lynn?
Yes. So the next two conventions I'm going to be at is Amazing Hawaii Con, which it is in Hawaii, so that's probably harder for all of you to go to, but it's my town, so that's why I attend. And yes, I'll be at Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle.
I love that Erica was like, Lynn covers the East Coast and will be in Seattle.
I don't know geography.
That's okay. I barely know it too. So, you know, getting ready to do this book and everything, what are some, like, what's kind of the final pitch for people to, like, jump onto this book?
I mean, our signatures aren't enough of an incentive.
Signatures and prints? Come on, guys.
Well, I'd say, of course, yes, signatures and prints, a pre-order, which you can get by going to nuclearpowercomic.com or fanbasepress.com. It's also just promoting, supporting, like, indie comic books and female creators. And for anybody that is, again, like, a big alternate history fan, and loves a good story about political intrigue, government conspiracy, deception,
superpowers.
This is the book for you.
Nice. But you guys had me sold at nuclear mutants and post-apocalypse. I'm pretty easy to please. So. I just want to say, like, thank you for taking the risk for making a book that's, you know, outside of a lot of genre norms. There's definitely not a lot of books like this out there. And then being female creators is also, like, a very big deal. So thanks for taking the risk, and I hope your book is incredibly successful.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for having us on your show.
Of course.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.